Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com. Today's program has been brought to you by Fairway Market. Learn more at fairwaymarket.com.
Hi, and welcome to A Taste of the Past. I'm your host, Linda Palaccio, on this half-hour journey through culinary history. And today's subject on our show is something that's very near and dear to my heart. It's liquid gold. Liquid gold. It's a substance that's been around for millennia. In fact, over 3 million tons of it were produced in this past year alone. It can sanctify sinners, soothe chapped hands, light our lamps, and it makes food taste so good. What am I talking about? Olive oil. Olive oil, that wonderful, wonderful, unctuous, golden liquid that we fry in, that we make salad dressings with, that we douse our wonderful chopped tomatoes and cheeses with. Sometimes we can just drink it from a cup. It is good. And with me today is Tony DeMarco. Tony, who with his son Peter, imports olive oils from primarily Spain and Portugal and supplies them to stores such as, well, to Fairway, where you can find his oils at the Fairway Market. And Tony also writes and researches the history surrounding this wonderful, wonderful liquid. Welcome, Tony.
Nice to be here. Thanks for having me.
Tell me, you know, there is so much history surrounding the olive trees, olive branches, olive oil. Where did it all start?
Well, I guess I would have to go back about 20 million years ago.
Well, maybe we could fast forward a little bit.
goes back to the Roman Empire, to the Greeks, to the Phoenicians, the Arabs. It's part of the whole Mediterranean basin culture. The civilization as we know it, actually Western civilization as we know it, probably could not have existed had not the farmers back in those days decided to add this substance to their diet and grow trees, because what that did was it made people stay in one place. Mm-hmm. Because they had to tend trees for long periods of time rather than farming with grains, where you know you could plant a field and you know it was more of a temporary thing. And as the olive oil culture expanded from places like Syria and Turkey, where it's many people think it began there,
right.
It just trade just exploded with this substance, olive oil and wine, and that's how the cultures interacted throughout the ages as our Western civilization was growing.
Right. Well, certainly in Mesopotamia, we know in the Fertile Crescent, there, you know, wheat was, as you mentioned, was a very important crop. And,
yes.
And olive trees were, you know, were not far behind.
Yes.
But
yes.
The olives, we don't really have that much evidence of the olive oil being used for human consumption. Well, let's say as early as we do being used for other purposes.
Correct. Right? One of the first mentions of it, in some of the Egyptian pyramids, there's evidence of amphorae, you know, in mixed in with the hieroglyphics on the insides of the pyramids. But the Egyptians used it primarily as part of a makeup and as and a substance that they could put on their skin to protect their skin.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't really, they didn't use it as something that they could consume.
Right, and anointing, it had religious connotations for, you know, for thousands and thousands of years.
I mean, the Bible mentions olive oil so many, I've got so much research from the Bible. It's just, you know, hundreds of times mentioned in the Bible. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, get messages from God telling the Jews in Egypt that as they were wandering, you know, how to make their anointing oil for their priests. And when they, before they had the temples, they were, as they were wandering, the Ark of the Covenant was in tents, in a tent that they took down and moved all around with them. And there's actually a passage in the Bible that's God telling the Jews how to make their anointing substance for their priests, who had to be anointed with it, and anointing also parts of the tent and mm-hmm. all of the relics that were in there. And it was a very deep part of their religious services, and olive oil was the main ingredient, along with some other spices.
Mm-hmm. And actually, you mentioned in some of your writings that one of the formulas that all the
different
spices that went.
Yes.
And of course, we know about the oil being used for lighting lamps and
of
the
course.
History back there.
Yes, the Hanukkah, okay. You know, Hanukkah is based on that miracle,
right?
You know, of the oil lasting for a long time, and it's just such a deep part of the whole, you know, experience of the Judeo-Christian and Western civilization. It's just
right.
You can't imagine any of this happening without that substance.
Right. So we fast forward, maybe, I don't know, 10,000 years or so. but the evidence we see on the cuneiform tablets, for instance,
yes.
and as you mentioned, in some of the relics, the amphora that exist, and mm-hmm. and the patois, the barrels, the old
yes.
you know, ceramic wine barrels. Mm-hmm. This is when we start seeing evidence of human consumption.
Yes, and trade.
We're talking maybe 2500 BC, or
yes,
maybe, you know.
Yeah, actually even before that, yeah. Probably maybe 4000 BC. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it just was a substance that got, you know, very, very, had a very important place in the diet. It began to have a very important place in the diet of those people, because it's a, olive oil, as you probably know, is a very calorie-dense substance, and it was just a huge part of their diet. And mm-hmm. The ancients knew that this was a health-bringing product also. And they, you know, they didn't have x-rays or antibiotics or, you know, anything like that, but yet these civilizations just kept growing and growing and growing. And one of the questions I ask in my writing is, how was it that Roman soldiers could move like 40 or 50 miles in a day with a pack and their armor and everything on them?
And no dehydrated foods that we know of.
Exactly, right? Exactly. And but because they were carrying olive oil with them, and they had their Pecorino Romano cheese, and they had some oranges, and they, you know, had some other, you know, foods that would stay for a long time. And that's one of the things that made the Roman Empire, pardon the expression, it greased the wheels of the Roman Empire.
I like it. That's good. Well, I mentioned in my introduction to you that over 3 million tons of olive oil mm-hmm. has been produced this past year alone.
Yes,
amazing. So. The production techniques. This was not an easy substance to produce.
No, it's not. It's not.
I mean, it's not now, but
even
way back
now,
then. Yeah, even way back then.
You got to have your stuff together to really do it right.
Yeah, and that was. Yeah. It's a long process. So,
yes.
As you said, they planted trees, so they stay put in an area
yes.
where the trees were growing. Well, they also had to stay put in an area because they had to produce this oil. Which,
exactly.
Which talk about that a little bit.
Well,
the production techniques.
Well, it goes back to the starting of it was basically people crushing the olive, which originally was a wild, like a weed, and they would crush it and put hot water on it, on the mix,
mm-hmm.
and then that what the water would do would the oil would float on top of the water, and that's how they would separate it. They then moved on to stone presses. There's also some great art in the Museum of Fine Arts in Boston. There's an ancient Greek vase that shows a Greek spike press, which is a large, like a giant limb, and there's a person hanging on one end of the limb, and
the counterweight.
They're squeezing this gigantic burlap type sack of the olive must and to get the oil out of it. So there's, and now in the modern days we're up to gigantic centrifuges. If you buy the right stuff, it should never be, you know, produced with a chemical. And then there's a lot of that out there, so you have to be really careful. But yeah.
Well, and even so, even from those early Egyptian and Greek times, I mean, the production didn't change until the later Roman period, right?
Correct.
Around maybe 70. Well, we don't exactly know when the upright stone press was invented.
We
have evidence of it from Pompeii,
yes,
but
yes,
we don't exactly know when it was first.
Romans did do something great with having that upright stone press that, you know, one person or two people could, you know, wheel around,
like,
and it was
perpendicular, but gigantic, huge stone.
Yes.
That you could, I would imagine it took some pretty strong people to roll that around.
Yes, and then of course later they, you know, hooked the animals to it and rolled it around also.
And really, the production did not change until
I think it was in the 30s or 40s. That things started to slightly change.
Well, the hydraulic presses.
Yes, hydraulic presses, and then later going into the mechanical, electric-driven machines that we have now.
If anyone has ever been fortunate enough to go to an olive production center and see the production, it is really something to behold.
It is. It is. And that's what my son and I were. All last July, we were in Europe, in Italy and Spain and Portugal, visiting the people that we deal with. And I think that's one of the things that why, you know, we do business with the people we do business with, because we have personal relationships with people in the mills, and we visit with them, we eat with them, we drink with them, and we look at their, you know, at their factories, and we touch their trees and look at their olives.
So there's got to be a passion involved.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Those are the only people that we deal with.
Interesting. Tony has brought several different oils with him, and I know we're going to have a chance to do some oil tasting, and you thought I was joking when I said sometimes you can sip it out of a cup. But if you go and watch oil pressing, if you have an opportunity to do that, it is so marvelous, because these this paste gets squished, and then it just swirls around and around, and it looks so fantastic, and then drains out. And there, even some production centers still use stones.
Yes,
as you mentioned, centrifuging is important.
Some of our artisanal producers do still use. They have that as a side, kind of a side product, that it, because the production is so low compared to the, you know, the mechanical, the big machines that they use now.
Well, now we know that, of course, in the Mediterranean, olive trees, you know, grew beautifully and still do. And there's a large production in Italy, in the south of France, and Spain, and Portugal, and Greece. And now all of a sudden we have olive production, not all of a sudden, but since the late 1800s, in California as well.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay, how did that happen?
Well, that was actually the Spaniards really are responsible for that. They
and who other than Cristoforo Colombo, perhaps?
Well, the missionaries, actually, the Franciscan missionaries, and the Camino Real, they planted trees as they Christianized Mexico, and they went up through California, and, you know, some of those trees are still around.
Well, here again, the olive branch being so symbolic.
Yes. Yes. What was it that the dove brought to Noah?
That's right.
When the flood was over and the sun started to shine.
an olive branch.
Exactly, exactly. It's just so.
And Noah knew he could live there. Right?
Yes. Yeah.
Park my boat, and I can make a life. Right. We got olives. Yes. What else do we need? Yep. Grapes. No. We need grapes.
Yep.
Olives and grapes. Well, so olives came to California, but and you know, olive oil production began, as well as just oil, yes. just olive production.
Yes.
Olive canning.
Yes.
And it's interesting because I asked you before the show if you knew how much olive oil the U.S. consumed. And it's not U.S. olive oil, but just olive oil in general. Mm-hmm. And you told me how many tons?
300,000 tons this year, it should be.
300,000 tons of yes. olive oil. And yes. that's how much our cooking habits and dining habits have changed, because since 1964, it's increased. What do we figure out?
Like about 900% or 1,000%.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, just think about it. There, you know, we used to use lard, margarine.
Yes.
You know, lots of Crisco yeah. and other vegetable oils. And now our mm-hmm. pantries are filled with this wonderful, wonderful liquid gold. After we come back from a short break, we're going to talk about the specific oils, where they come from, and taste a few.
Hi, I'm Steve Jenkins. I work for Fairway Markets in the New York area, and we're awfully proud to support Heritage Radio, and we care so much about everything that goes on out here at Roberta's in their studio, because they talk to people who are serious about food, and that's what we are at Fairway, is we're serious about food. We just care very deeply about you as a customer, and how you cook and what you cook with and how you entertain, and that's why we love to support Heritage Radio, because it's pretty much the same thing. It's wanting to find happiness through serious food and people who are serious about it and care about learning everything there is to learn about it. And that's we're kindred spirits. If it's something worth having in your kitchen, you're going to find it at Fairway. And if there's somebody worth talking to about food, you're going to find them on Heritage Radio, and we will be supporting you guys for a long, long time. At Fairway, I'm your personal grocer, Steve Jenkins, Fairway Market.
Okay, we are back with Tony DeMarco, and we are talking about olive oil. And we were talking about the production of olive oil. You know, in doing some digging for facts, olive oil production came and went, you know, it went up, went down, with wars,
barbarian invasions.
The north. Yep. Well, because look, olive trees didn't grow in the north. They were a butter culture.
and
lard culture. But also, olive oil was not viewed as a subsistence crop. olive oils, first of all, the trees in certain areas were very difficult to grow.
Mm-hmm.
And they were a very expensive, and still are, very expensive crop to harvest.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to say anything about harvesting the olives? I'm sure you've been there at harvest time.
There's so many different ways that it can be done. In Andalusia, they have a lot of that's the breadbasket of the olive oil producing world. They would have go through with big machines with giant kind of like sticks on them that revolve into the trees, and then the olives fall down. Some places just let them fall down naturally. Some are hand picked. It's just all over the place.
And there are purists who, you know, will say, I don't want any sticks touching me.
Right.
But if you travel to any of the olive growing areas around this time of year, actually,
mm-hmm.
November,
yep.
you'll see nets all over the ground. Right.
Because that makes it easy for them to pick them
right.
up.
Right. They just spread and sometimes they're colorful nets so they can actually see which areas have nets and which don't.
Yep.
But they're, you know, a fine mesh net mm-hmm. spread all over the grounds under the yeah. under the trees.
Sometimes
under the
they keep them up off the ground too, a
so few don't get
feet.
Wet.
Yes,
yeah. Yeah. And then that way, with the trees, when they naturally fall, or if they just shake the tree a little or bang it with
right.
a stick, they fall into
yes.
these nets.
Yeah.
But not a cheap. I mean, a very expensive crop to harvest. I mean, they are extremely. I'm going to say the word's not coming to me. They rot easily.
Yes,
putrefaction ruins a lot of
Correct.
Olive crops.
And then there's the olive fly that that can bore in and ruin a whole crop.
Yeah.
You have to be really careful.
And as soon as these things are picked, you got to take them to the mill.
It
right?
can't sit around very long.
Yeah.
So that's another thing is how close the trees are to the mill. And what kind of setup the miller has to bring them to in
the press,
because
right.
there are huge volumes of olives that have to be dealt with very very quickly to make a good oil.
Right, and I read someplace that the really good oil, we're talking first press virgin. Mm-hmm. 25 pounds of olives to 1 quart. Does that match up with your figures you have?
You know, it depends. It depends on the olive. It depends on the way the production process goes. But it can be about that kind of ratio. You use a lot of olives to make a small amount of oil.
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah. 10 pounds for a quart of whatever oil, you know. But
that's not far off the base.
So let's talk about grades of oil mm-hmm. and the organoleptic properties. I love
yes.
that word, organoleptic properties.
It's a big one.
Yeah, meaning what we see, feel, touch.
Correct.
Right.
Taste. Yes.
The properties that are involved in oils.
Yes.
What? Tell me about the grades of oils and what do they mean?
Well, we only deal with extra virgin olive oil, and extra virgin is the first cold pressing.
All right, but the thing is, all right, cold pressing.
Yes.
When are we going to get away from cold pressing? We don't use heat anymore.
It's actually it's an important term, even if because a centrifugal machine, one of the big ways that it's produced now, can generate heat
mm-hmm.
in the mix, and so you want to have it can't go above a certain temperature to be called. A cold press.
Right.
So they are. All of our producers are very careful to stay underneath that.
The olives come in from the fields. They're kind of cold. They're still cold. You don't
yep.
use any heat from
yep.
hot water to
correct
to dilute
correct.
The oils. You want that virgin drop
exactly.
of cold fresh oil.
Exactly.
Coming
and actually,
out of there.
Our one of our producers in Portugal actually has a setup where he can refrigerate. The mix after it's ground.
The paste.
The paste,
just, yeah.
yes. And he actually has a refrigeration process to keep it really cold. And actually, I have this here for you, the Cabaçal das Nogueiras from Portugal that won the International Olive Oil Council World Prize.
Oh, that's wonderful!
Last year, so we'll taste that.
We'll taste that. Okay.
Yes.
Well, I know I'm reading too about the cold pressed, mm-hmm. cold pressed virgin olive. Because after they got this paste, what would they do? They would add hot water to it.
They could add. It just depends on like how many different grades they want to go down.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, substance
squeezing the last drop out of that paste.
Exactly, and it has so many uses after the stuff that we consume, the good stuff that we consume.
Uh-huh.
It can just do so many. There's one company in Portugal that turns some of the remains into biofuel.
That's great. I was going to say, when are we going to start running our cars with olive oil?
Well, yeah, it's not, cook, wouldn't be the
cook
stuff
some pasta would, at the same time on the engine.
It wouldn't be the stuff you would eat, believe
no,
me.
But. No, right. Yeah, I mean, that's just that. It had these uses early history.
Yes.
And it's about time for us to start harnessing some of this. Of course, again, it's an expensive production process, and let's eat it first.
Yes, and, you know, the whole thing we really haven't touched on yet, too, is that all of the health benefits that this brings to you.
Right.
It's just huge. We initially were, you know, hooked into that, you know, olive oil has a good fat. Now they've found, you know, hundreds of different, there's about 200 chemical compounds inside of olive oil that do everything from reducing inflammation to, you know, helping your arteries work better and feeding your brain. It's just, the research is just mind-boggling.
And the research is ongoing, so we can't make too many, you know, specific medical claims yet, but they are in the works. Mm-hmm. And certainly as antioxidant, we know the antioxidant properties.
Yes.
And anti-inflammatory properties, they're working on it. I mean, you can't... I mean,
well, actually, there's some studies that have
That are past the...
Yes.
The FDA
the FDA, what do you have to do to satisfy them?
I know. But we, as you know, radio station, we have to be very careful about what we're going to claim.
I'll make sure I don't say anything.
Right. Hey, you know what?
Even though, look at me, I have people think I'm 10 years younger than I am.
Oh, you just smeared it on your face or do you swallow
it?
No,
I just infuse it into my, I have a little drip that goes into my mouth.
But what you say is absolutely correct that... It is a much healthier, I mean, we all know the claims of the Mediterranean diet.
Yes.
And it does have, much better properties than any other fats. And certainly it's lubricating those joints somewhere around.
Yes.
In fact, it has a lot of cosmetic value as well.
Yes, there's, depending upon the grade, it will be, you know, shipped off to a cosmetic company and mixed with, makeup and, you know, to put on your face or
hair
whatever.
Oil, face oil, yes. Cuticle oil. I mean, you know, it's mm-hmm. why not?
If you ever take, you know, just try and experiment and just take some regular olive oil and just rub a little bit on your skin and you'll see that your skin is just going to shine. And it'll shine for quite a while.
Hmm.
And that's what, you know, the Egyptians were, that's why they got hooked on it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and all the gods in the games, they would all have to be completely anointed and rubbed down with this oil.
Yeah.
Right?
It helps, too, when you're a mummy.
Yeah.
Because it's a preservative. It's a great, you know, it preserves just about everything.
Well, I'll try to remember that. But let's taste some of this wonderful stuff that you brought here. I can't wait.
The first thing I want to do is, because we've worked for a very long time on this one, this is from Baena, which is in Andalusia. So
in
there's
Spain. So these are only Spanish and Portugal wines that you have. Okay. Now, at being at FBI, Tony told me he was FBI and I started to take cover, but... Full-blooded Italian.
Correct.
But you're importing of olive oil. You do no Italian. It's all Spain.
Correct. Italy has a real problem in that they do not have enough, really, for their own consumption.
Yeah.
And because they don't have the land that Spain does and Portugal does. So, and there's a... I'm sad to say, because I'm Italian, there's a lot of fraud in the Italian market.
I was going to say,
market.
we didn't touch on that, and that was exposed even just recently, a few years back.
Yes,
right?
Yeah.
Additives of other nuts, oils, and...
Nut oils and
chemicals.
Correct.
To extract the
oil.
And you're getting, you know, they're you know, selling it off as extra virgin olive oil. And
you
got to
be careful. You can, simple way to test it is to put it in the fridge. And if it doesn't solidify, because all these fats, if they're the right kind of fats, they'll solidify when they get cold.
Mm-hmm.
If you put if you buy cheap olive oil and you put it in the fridge and it doesn't solidify, kiss it goodbye.
Okay. That's what about sometimes you'll find globules in the bottom of a bottle? What
color? The white ones or just regular?
I guess kind of white.
Yeah. Well, that's from olive oil that's been cold, and if you leave it out, it'll warm up.
It'll warm up again.
But all of our oils that we get are unfiltered because we like the taste that those little bits of olives lends to the to the product. So
and this is one that you brought. Yes. You brought an unfiltered. But I want to taste that Portuguese one first.
You want to taste the Portuguese one. You want to go right to the top.
All right. Well, we're going to do a vertical tasting. Let's start with this unfiltered. Yeah, okay. All right.
I think I'd like to have you try this Baena because we worked a long time. It's very unusual that it has the denomination of origin from Baena.
And I'm looking at it for our listeners, it's very cloudy.
Yes.
I mean, some people might turn their nose and say, ooh, I don't want to buy this olive oil, but it's unfiltered.
It's buttery. And it's butter color.
It is a butter color, a greenish butter color, right. Okay, so let's taste it.
Bottoms up.
All right, now we have little cups of it, glug, glug, glug. And now tell me what we do when we taste it.
Well, you can roll it around in your mouth.
We smell it.
Mm-hmm, and smell it.
Kind of like just tasting wine,
yes.
Right?
Yes, mm-hmm.
We kind of let it kind of roll in our tongue and on our palate, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Now, do you notice a slight tingling sensation at the back of your throat?
I do. Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, that's oleocanthal, which has been proven to be...
yes, I do.
It's been proven to be more of an anti-inflammatory than the COX inhibitors. If you look in my readings, it's a really good study.
So I think I need to drink about a cup and a half of this. All right. Okay.
What kind of taste? It's kind of.
Actually, when I got over that, the tingling in the back of my throat as I was rolling it through, it's. I would say it was more neutral than some of the oils that I tend to to like. Mm-hmm. But it buttery came again into my taste buds. It was kind of a buttery flavor that was not too fruity.
Mm-hmm. It's a bit
a little
pungent,
grassy, maybe a little
It's a bit pungent, but it's
pepper, a little peppery.
Yeah. Yes,
yeah.
But this has Oji Blanca, Piqual, and Arbequina oils
Arbequina oils, olives. I know.
Okay. Yeah, and this is a denomination of origin only from a specific. These trees have to grow in Baena to be this oil.
All right, now let me ask you: are most olive oils single variety olives or
no? Most of them are blends.
Hmm.
Most of them are blends.
Okay.
So let's go next to the another denomination of origin oil, Gata Herdes from Valle del Jerte in northern Spain. The main olive in this bottle is the Manzanilla Casareña. And it has a different, if you notice, and if you look at it, it's a bit greener.
Right. I'm going to need to cleanse my palate with a little piece of, Tony brought some bread so we can cleanse our, now you have to cleanse your palate between tastes, all right? So this is green, it's definitely green, it's very clear, very clear, but it's definitely greener.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. All right. And this is northern Spain.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Mm. Oh.
You
like
it?
Mm. I like it a lot. This is very fruity.
Mm-hmm.
Very fruity.
But also the tingle.
Yeah.
A bit of a tingle.
No, it's on fire.
It sneaks up on you, right?
Yeah. Mm, I'm on
fire. That's when you know you have something, you're doing something really, really good for your bod. Really.
Okay.
Really.
And when I drink scotch, is that really like I'm doing something good? It
probably.
Burns too.
Yeah. But, right. You have to think about what foods you would pair this with.
Mm-hmm.
And, this would be great to saute with. It would be great on a salad.
That's something we didn't mention, and that's the, because you're dealing only in extra virgin olive oils here. But a lot of people who, like to fry with olive oil, they'll use one that's not extra virgin because the burning point's higher.
I'm a purist.
I'm glad to hear that.
I don't want to have anything that might even, slightly have a tinge of some kind of chemical extraction.
And the ones that aren't every extra time you virgin go you
down,
think are.
Yes, every time you go down a bit from extra virgin, there's always a chance that there's been a chemical introduced to extract the
okay.
oil.
All right.
So you have to be really careful.
All right. Well, you know, it's interesting because one of my friends preeminent Italian a writer on Italian foods, Faith Willinger, she once said, if you've got good olive oil, and she teaches up in a class up in just outside of Lucca in Carmignano, and was there with, we had a flight of olive oil to taste it. I can't drill it through people's heads enough. If you've got good olive oil, use it for everything.
Bingo.
If you've got it, use it to fry in. Use it to you know, to dress your popcorn with. Use it to do everything.
Exactly.
With.
I've done like all those things with it. And the thing to do is to just, you want to just do your, if you want to saute in it, you just go up to the little bit above the smoke. As soon as it starts to smoke and shimmer, that's when you want to start putting, you know, your pork chop in or your fish or whatever.
And I've got my one bottle there that I use for everything, and then of course I'll have some of the you know, the higher price special stuff that I'll just
dress. It was the Arabs, the Moors in Spain, that discovered the frying in olive oil. No one did it before them.
Wow.
And then so that's that, you know, it's that crust that the olive oil puts on stuff that you saute that is what makes it so wonderful.
Okay, I'm getting hungry here, and we're running out of time. I want to taste this, this one really special one you brought.
Yes, this is...
They're all special.
Yes,
but
they are. But here's the Portuguese oil.
Yes, the Portuguese.
Cabeçal das Nogueiras.
Don't ask me to repeat that.
And this is a blend of Gallega, Cobrancosa, which grows only, this olive grows only in Portugal, and Arbequina and Cornacabra. And these, this oil won the world prize in the green fruity category.
Oh, wow. Fruity, but peppery too. Fruity and peppery at the same time. Whereas the other one I would say was more fruity, not peppery. This one, this tastes like it's fresh pressed right off the tree. And it's got to be last year's oil.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
This is
amazing.
Really incredible.
Yep, and this you'll be able to buy at Fairway pretty, you know, it we just landed some last week, so that you'll be able to see this at Fairway.
So look for Cabeçal das Nogueiras.
Nogueiras,
okay.
Portuguese.
Yeah, well, look for a Portuguese olive oil at Fairway, and you'll know it's going to be Tony's olive oil because it's delicious, and I can't wait to have some of these oils. These are really an eye-opener, you know, from just the usual standard stuff that you find at your supermarket. Try to branch out a little bit. Try to find something else.
And Linda, thank you for having me, and I bought you a bottle of Baena.
Of the buttery, unfiltered, wonderful stuff.
Yes,
that was great. Oh, thank you so much, Tony.
You're welcome.
It has been a real pleasure and an education as well.
My pleasure.
And I hope that our listeners have learned a thing or two, and they can go to Fairway and find these, and hopefully you'll have them in other markets as well soon. So we look forward to having you back again sometime.
I would
learn about
love
more.
To. All right? I would love to. It's an endless subject.
I'm sure. Okay. And there's so much we didn't talk about.
Yes.
But we'll have to tune in again to A Taste of the Past. I'm Linda Palacio. Thanks for joining.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.